podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's Wednesday, the 14th of March, 2018. My name is Patrick Smith. I've had a couple of glasses of wine, so let's see how this goes. A mixed weekend for the Belfast Giants, but probably winning of the games, probably winning the one game out of the two at the weekend that we wanted to win, and a result tonight that was strengthening our position in the Elite League. We'll get onto those in a second. We'll also be talking to Elite League referee Andrew Dalton. We'll hear from Adam Keefe and the GM, he's not the GM, he's the part owner, isn't he, of the Cardiff Devils, Todd Kelman. But first up, Mr. McGimsey, how are you?
Not bad, Patrick. Thanks for having me on again.
We're, of course, recording this a night later than we usually would, because you were out last night, Simon.
I was out, but I wasn't out. I was basically just taking Jasmine. I was taking Jasmine to the concert, and I had to hang about. And I'll tell you what, that flipping, the amount of people, there was, I think it was nearly 10,000 there last night for that One Direction. Had to rearrange things for us again. And I hope you get on the IHL, Pat, and try and get those 2 points back.
Damn right. 2 points of compensation, mate. One Direction aren't going to do it to us like they did the Sheffield Steelers. No way.
Well, I have to, in fairness, I have to thank David McCammon from Cool FM, and that was my compensation, so top lad.
Oh, aye. And here's me thinking you did it the proper way, but no, absolutely not. Good man, sis.
Absolutely.
Let's get stuck in, boys. The Belfast Giants took on the Brayhead Clan on Saturday night. The Clan coming in for the last time this season, and, took what it would be, I think, that's their second win over the Belfast Giants this season. I think the series between the two teams have been split 50-50. It was the Giants who scored first. It was Colin Shields with a shorthanded goal in the first period. But in the second period, it was all Clan. 3 goals. Brendan Brooks unassisted, Tyler Shattuck on the power play, and Cameron Burt on the power play to make the Brayhead Clan in a 3-1 lead. Into the third period, it was 4-1 Jacob Doughty scoring that fourth before Sebastian Silvestre and Brendan Connolly give the Giants a little bit of hope. But Tyler Shattuck, with his second of the game into the empty net, rounded off the scoring at 5-3. In goals, Ryan Nye for 48 shots, 45 saves. At the other side, Jackson Whistle, 34 shots and 30 saves. Your referees were Chris Wells and Pavel Halas. I'm sure we'll come on to that in a second, because this game was pretty heavy with regards to the penalty call. But Davey, of the weekend's games, I don't think this one was the more important of the two, but was it really the sort of the dead rubber that we expected it to be?
It was one of those things, Paddy. We spoke towards the end of last week's show about the upcoming games. You know how I love to do that, and said obviously that the Nottingham game was much more important in terms of trying to tie down the conference. And you know, we, after the Lord Mayor's show, you know, winning the Challenge Cup the Sunday night before, having a few days off, and obviously a few drinks in the tank as well for the boys, and you know, we could have came out here really flat, but we actually came out really, really dumb. Like that first period, more than 20 shots. I'm still sceptical about, I haven't gone through the sheets that Stevie Thompson sent over. I'm sceptical that Brayhead had 5 shots on Jackson Whistle in that first period. You know, it was utter domination, and I suppose a disappointment to come out of that first period so dominant, only with a 1-goal lead, albeit a shorthanded goal. You know, we should have taken more opportunities. We'll let their goalie get into the game, and then they come out in the second period and score straight away, and it takes a wind out of our sails, and then, my goodness, we run into penalty trouble. I think we killed penalties 15, 16 minutes of that, and you know, that middle period, and that sucked the legs out of the guys, sucked the life out of the guys, and you know, yeah, we took on sportsmanlike penalties again. One of them, the Blair Riley one, Simon will probably talk on more, because he was quite vociferous about it on the webcast. But you know, we just dug ourselves into that hole of being 4-1 down, and then having to spring back into the game. And it was just a little bit too little too late. We got back to 4-3, and we looked like we had opportunities. We just couldn't we just couldn't get the puck in. And one of those, it just really, really was one of those nights where the scoreline, we got into a special teams battle, and we can't do that at the minute because special teams-wise, we can't keep the puck out of our net when we're short of man for whatever reason. You were shelled three power play goals again against the Clam. Unfortunately for us, we just left ourselves too big a mountain to climb after that second period of indiscipline. And, you know, a few unfortunate calls, a few calls that I think were guesses by the ref. I think that's, you know, we'll have Andy Dalton on later the show, and I always get the sort of stick that I'm the guy that sticks up for them, and on most occasions I do, but I also think that officials shouldn't guess. And I think there was elements of some of the calls were guess calls. I think that has led out with the likes of the Furland one being reviewed by Dobbs with no further action. You know, it's not a terribly bad hit. The D-man ducks as Furland comes to make the hit, and if you know the Furland's coming to hit you, you have to body up and take the hit because he hits everything that moves, and you got to be aware of who's on the ice at all times. But I think the refs in a few of the instances that night, guess calls, and you see on 60 Minutes Adam Keefe taking the abusive official as well. Just all built up and then the lid blew off towards the end.
Says, I'll let you pick up on that point with regards to the refereeing, because obviously on the webcast you were quite vociferous about some of those calls, as Davey said. Did it have an effect on how the Giants played this game?
Well, I mean, when you get bad calls made against you, players get frustrated. I mean, if you watch back the video, and I said it right at the very time, the hit from Jonathan Furland on, I can't remember who it was he hit, but, you know, the hit, it's not a penalty. It's not a penalty any day of the week. If Jonathan Furland leads the Belfast Giants and hits all season long, as a defenseman and the opposition team, you need to know who's on the ice and up against you every time that you're out there. And if you know that Jonathan Furland's out there, and if that guy hasn't done his homework that Furland finishes his checks, then more fool him. So Furley's coming in, hits the guy, the referee's arm doesn't even go up until the player just stays in the ice, stays down. It's 2 seconds before the arm goes up. And then Craig Sescon jumps in, gets a 10-minute misconduct for dropping the gloves and wanting to go with Furley. Again, I thought that was harsh on Sescon as well. He's sticking up for what he thought was a teammate who was hurt, who didn't miss a shift, by the way. Absolutely nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Leading on to that, 30 seconds later, the hit from Kevin Rain. Yeah, I think absolutely, 100%. They actually got that right. 5 minute from behind and a game misconduct. No issue with that whatsoever. And then there's the other one where Blair Riley gets 2 minutes. Believe it or not, he's called for high sticks. And Spiro Galakos gets him the unsportsmanlike conduct. But as the captain of the Belfast Giants approaching the referee to ask a question about that penalty, and the referee to completely wave him out, completely blank him, completely ignore him, and give him a 2 minute penalty, which then they led to a 5-on-3 and a power play goal. Pavel Hallas needs to take a really good look at himself, because that was absolutely brutal. Now, yes, I'm always seems to be the one that leads the charge against team stripes. I don't like doing it, but in this situation, we were absolutely 100% right, because Dobbs agreed with us again. They didn't think it was a penalty, you know, for a suspension that will hit on Jonathan Furland. There was also the one for, in all fairness, I couldn't actually believe that Rayner got away without getting a suspension, to be very, very honest. I thought that's at least a one-game suspension. Yes, he has not a penalty this season for hitting from behind or a suspension, so that might have went in his favour. Couldn't believe that he got away, but we got to play him on the Saturday against Nottingham. And then again, another spearing penalty for Brayhead Brooks.
Brooks, Brian Brooks it was, yeah.
He got called for spearing, so he got a 5-plus game for spearing. I don't think it was a spear. So, I mean, you've got guys out there, referees, yes, we all know they're trying to do their best, but Pavel Hallas had an absolute mirror that night. You've got to give Chris Wells a bit of credit, because Chris Wells, when there was penalties called, he was trying, you could see them trying to explain what the penalties were to the guys who were getting frustrated. Sebastian's one of them. He got a couple of penalties that, you know, he needs to stop that. We've went on for him all season. Yes, he's a Belfast Giant, but it's getting boring now. And he needs to knock that in the head. He's letting his teammates down. And the amount of time that Martinelli and Kevin Rayne and Brennan, sorry, Bramman Benedict are all playing shorthanded, these guys are absolutely busted. He needs to knock that in the head. But again, for me, Hallas had a mirror, absolute mirror. I'm not blaming the referees why we lost that game. Absolutely not. We didn't take our chances. 20 shots in the first period on target. At least another 10, 12 that missed the target. We just couldn't put the puck in the net. Ryan Nye was outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. Yeah. Best goalie I've seen regarding an appearance this season at the SSA Arena. I thought he was absolutely sensational. But disappointing performance. Sort of, when you look at the whole picture, you're never standing in the tunnel watching us coming out there and lifting the cup. And that's got to give everybody a bit of a lift, you know, wanting to go right, but they think they're just here for the party. And that's sort of what it looked like when we went one each and then 2-1 down. Disappointing, but as you've already said, sort of a dead rubber game.
Dave, is there something to be said in this game that they were fighting for something that we weren't?
Well, they're obviously still trying to get into that eighth slot and qualify for the playoffs. So, yeah, that had a bit. But, you know, the first period doesn't tell a lie, Paddy, how pure dominant we were. And, you know, but for a really good goaltending performance from Ryan, and maybe, you know, harshly a bit of wasteful finishing from the Giants, you know, it's a completely different score. You know, we get 2-3 behind him in the first period there, as we really should have. You know, we came out of the traps really, really fast. And disappointing. You like to win every game, but as we said at the very start of the piece, not the game over the weekend that you would worry if you did lose it. Especially, you know, for me, the league's over as far as us as being, you know, in any way of catching Cardiff. So it wasn't the game over the weekend that you'd been worried about losing.
Let's move on to Sunday afternoon's game. It was delayed to 4:30 Sunday afternoon. It was against the Nottingham Panthers, visiting the SSE for the final time this season. Well, outside, unless we face them in the playoffs, of course. They are in sixth place currently, I believe. But the Giants took a 6-4 win. Darcy Murphy scoring the only goal of the first period after just under 2 minutes. Into the second period, Sylvester doubled that advantage before Mark Delago on 7:53 pulled one back for the Panthers. But Darcy Murphy was second of the game on the power play, and then Brendan Connolly, with 20 seconds left in the period, put the Giants 4-1 ahead. Into the third, Colin Shields made a 5-1, and the Giants seemed to be cruising after only a minute of the third period. But the Panthers started to hit back, and hit back with three unanswered goals. Brett Pelini, Luke Pither, who's been fantastic for them since he's come in, and Tim Billingsley give the Panthers hope. They fought for it, but with just under a minute left in the game, Brendan Connolly scored an empty net goal, not getting the memo that only Jonathan Ferland scores an empty net goals for us these days. Looking in the goals, Patrick Albraith got the start with Michael Garnett as backup, so they've an import on the bench. 35 shots, 30 saves. At the other side, Jackson Whistle, 34 shots, 30 saves. Same referees, Pavel Hallas, Chris Wells. The game wasn't as as penalty heavy this time, and the Giants, despite the slip up in the third, proved pretty dominant through this game.
Yeah, Adam, you know, I spoke to Adam on Sunday morning at about 11 o'clock, and he was still waiting to hear whether or not there was going to be suspensions carried out. And at one stage, he was going to dress himself, and obviously that led on to tonight because we were, you know, short on bodies, and they had to play tonight. But I actually thought we played really well on Sunday, Paddy. I thought we got off to a great start. You know, a goal in the first 2 minutes is always great to, you know, lift the crowd. However, you know, the rest of that period, again, you've got another goaltender who's coming in and pulling off saves that he's no right to pull off. You know, I thought he did really well and making a number of really quality saves to keep his team in it. Second period, again, you know, a goal to go 2-0 up. And then they replied, but I think it was pretty quickly as well. And we got a power play goal, which is the first of the weekend. So going 4-1 up at the end of the second. And then wasn't Shed scored the goal to make it 5-1?
It was, it was Shed scored within a minute.
Yeah, and then we do what we've seemed to be doing an awful lot. We just stop skating.
Yep.
We stop skating, you know, we... We make a couple of mistakes. They get a bit of momentum from one goal. Then they get another one very quickly, and then they get another one, and it's back to 4-3. And then we're sort of scrambling to get the puck. We can't get the puck on our own end. Jackson wasn't getting much support at that time, and it's just stupid mistakes. It's turnovers in your own end, and with players like the Nottingham Panthers have this, they can punish you. They really can put you up against the wall and give you a tough ask. But, 5-3 and then getting the empty net just to solidify it, with about a minute to go was I think we got our just rewards. I do think we overall deserved the win. And picking up the 2 points against another our hard conference team, which has been great. And again, I thought it was a really good game. I thought we came out and made a reaction to the night before, and Adam was looking for that, but it came at a bit of a cost because, as I say, we're another couple of injuries and we were short on bodies tonight. So it's hopefully we'll get these guys back a bit quicker than the playoffs start up,
Davey, one of the last times the Nottingham Panthers came into the SSE Arena, the podcast after that, you actually took time and gave the Nottingham Panthers credit for the way that they played. They did come from a 5-1 to pull it back within a goal. Do you feel that they were as good this time?
No, they actually started the game. I know we got a goal in the first 2 minutes, but probably for the first 90 seconds of the game, they got 3-4 shots off on Wes early. They pinned us back in our own blue zone, and we couldn't get out. And we came as Darcy Murphy, I think. I don't have the game sheet up in front of me. Or Darcy Murphy away with the first
Murphy
goal.
Was the first goal in 1:53.
And that settles the jittery nerves. And, from then, I think we were pretty much in control of that game for 55 minutes of that game. For Simon said, we stopped skating for 5 minutes and we got punished. They come roaring back into the game, and they're not a bad side. They've obviously got very, very good systems in place there. They tackle that weak side, that weak wing, very, very well with that, that shot down the right-hand side with the left winger coming in. And they go again, they keep us down low, they pin us in, and they get it back up to the points and get shots. And Jackson Whistle had to be on his guard, I think, when it came down to the empty netter. We hit the post and the bar 3 times with the empty net one end. I remember Mosienko doing that a number of years ago. We won a fantastic podcast title from it. But
one of my favourites, actually, that podcast title.
Although I think we should maybe have a goal awarded to us.
Yes.
Just prior to that, somebody's absolutely hauled down when he's just about to shoot into the empty bucket. But, overall, I think that we deserved a win. We controlled the face-offs pretty well on the night. And power play special teams again, yeah, we'll come 1-for-5 on the power play. But we are really, really struggling with the extra man to get zone time for whatever reason. 5-on-5, we seem to be able to get good zone entry, good puck possession, good movement, good shots. When we've got an extra man, we just seem to struggle to get set up in the opposition zone. And for a lot of, seems a confidence thing on our power play, we spend a lot of time skating back towards Jackson Whistle to retrieve the puck. So that's something that for a decent playoff run, we're going to have to work on. The whistles get put away a wee bit more towards the playoffs, and it's a lot more of an even strength game, which suits us a lot better. But our discipline is going to be key going forward into the playoffs.
It's funny you mentioned face-offs there, because over the last maybe couple of months, especially when we had that bit of a dip in the game against MK, the game against the Caps and whatever, face-offs weren't really going our way. Do you think that we've turned a corner and we're starting to get that possession again?
No.
No? Okay. Why?
We're not winning enough draws. I would, what coach wouldn't, what fan wouldn't, what player wouldn't, we need to be 10% better, certainly at home, on face-offs than we have been this season. We're below 500 in face-off, which just isn't good enough as a team. You have to win more face-offs than you lose. We're a puck possession team. We're better with the puck. We've got skilled players. We have fast players. We're better when we have the puck than when you're chasing the puck. It's just, is it hockey 101? If you don't have the puck, you've got to go and get it back before you can do anything with it. If you've got it, you can do something with it. So it's much more advantageous. That comes from a lack of natural centres through this team as well. We've got a lot of wingers that are taking face-offs, and then face-off nuances with people being thrown out. We're much better when we can get our centre men, who are, the guys, certainly the wingers that are playing centre that night, and you find us maybe having four or five guys taking face-offs across a night, whereas I think against the Panthers, against Brayhead on the Saturday night, you know, we've maybe 10 or 11 guys have ended up taking face-offs, you know, which is just too big a spread, and it's just messy, and we're not getting enough possession. So it's something that I'm sure they'll look at whenever they're recruiting next year, that they have more natural centres in the squad.
Says,
I agree. You know, the game's an awful lot easier when you've got the puck. I just think that you think Davey's right. You know, it's a matter of not having too many natural centres. Dustin John is still out. You know, Sheds has played centre during his career. He's playing on the wing. Saviano, you know, he can play at centre as well. You'd put him in anywhere, for course, he's going to do a job for you. But it's one of those ones where we are struggling to get a hold of the puck off the draw. And when we do, you know, we're certainly much more dangerous. But it makes the game an awful lot harder when you don't have it.
With Nottingham coming in on the Sunday, this game was actually preceded by an announcement through the week that that a man who has been a bane to us at the SSE or the Odyssey over the years has actually decided to retire. He's retired from GB with immediate effect, retiring from the Nottingham Panthers at the end of the season. That is number 5, David Clark, you know, guy who started his professional career right back with the Peterborough Pirates in the 96. We're talking a guy who's had over 20 years experience playing at the top level here in the UK with Newcastle, Chester, Guildford, Nottingham for most of his career. Davey, that's with the announcement previous to that, you know, Corey Nielsen going, David Clark was probably thought of as a natural successor to him behind the bench. Now, many thought it might have been a player coach. Does he make this move into coaching? And what a loss is David Clark, not just to the Nottingham Panthers, but to the game in the UK.
You know, a class act. You can go back through a podcast that I've done with you for, what have we been doing this, Paddy, maybe 6, 7, 8 years or something? I don't know, mate. But I've always give the Nottingham Panthers plenty of stick and always give David Clark plenty of kudos. You know, an absolute class act. His points speak for themselves. 725 EIHL points. Forget about the stuff that he got before the EIHL came along. You know, super guy on and off the ice, been very good to us here in the View from the Bridge, and he always seemed to score against the Belfast Giants, and he always seemed to come up with big goals and power play goals against us. Yeah. You know, he'll be missed. Will he step into Corey Nielsen's shoes? Pete Russell knocking about there as well. Who knows? You know, I don't know whether the Panthers can afford to go for what, in a sense, although Clark, he's been doing a lot of assistant coaches, and he's coached a lot throughout his career, and he does his coaching clinics and his schools and all. He'll still be a rookie coach, and can the Panthers afford to go with that? I don't know. You know, they demand success straight away. It's a hard one. Could he do it? I'm sure he could, because he's got an awful lot of experience there. It doesn't necessarily buy that, you know, just because you were a fantastic player, you'd end up being a fantastic coach. But, you know, we wish him well. Nice touch picking up Man of the Match and what will probably be his Odyssey swan song there on Saturday night, and maybe a little bit of sentimentality in the vote there, but nice to see him and Taft Dad obviously presenting the award.
Says his, you know, his record stands itself, but you know, you're talking about a guy who made his first turnout for GB in 97-98 as an under 18, has been in the GB squad every single year since. Even when he went to Italy, he spent a bit of time in Italy. You know, the guy was a top quality player.
Look, we reserve the word legend for you know, special cases, and in this case it's absolutely deserved, in my opinion. He's one of he's been one of the top British players of all time. He's been one of the top Brits and right throughout his EIHL career. He's one of the guys that I've always said that I would love to see him in a Belfast Giants jersey. That's now not going to happen. That's okay. I'm not losing any sleep over it. But, you know, he's just absolute quality. You know, as Davey says, and yourself backed up, you know, he always seemed to score against us. You know, just especially in the power play, coming off the top left circle and then rifling a one-timer top circle or top corner. And real, real good lad. I've only ever interviewed him once. Real, real nice guy. Everybody, I was speaking to Taff about him the other day. And Taff was saying, you know, he couldn't be a nicer fella. And again, we've no love for the Nottingham Panthers, but in all fairness, the Panthers are going to miss them. Fair play to David Clark. He's now sitting number one overall in points scored in the EIHL era. how long that lasts, we'll have to just wait and see. But, you know, congratulations to him on an absolutely amazing career. And thanks for all the time he gave us at the, on the number one podcast in the Elite League.
Seven-time Cup champion, one-time League champion. You've got a World Championship gold medal, of course, from last year. Three-time Best British Forward of the Year. Continental Cup champion. BNL Young Player of the Year, 98-99. The guy's got quite the honours list. And he retires from the game, as Simon says, as pretty much a legend of the British game. And we wish him good luck in whatever he chooses to do with the next step in his career. Coming back to that game against them, against the Panthers, Davey, this obviously of the weekend was the more important of the two, and the Giants having to, you know, win this and probably win the next two against the Cardiff Devils to pick up that conference title. Does that mean something to you?
Absolutely. Another rewind over old podcasts and find out, I was looking through old photographs the other day, that the last time I managed to get my own hands on the conference title, and looking back at the pictures of how happy I am. You know, I know perhaps when you're gunning for a league, the conference is like secondary, but it was always, I'm always of the train of thought, you know, if you're in a competition and there's a trophy to be won, you want to win it. You want to be able to put that in your trophy cabinet, because there's 11 other teams in the league, not necessarily, sorry, in the league, because there's obviously only three other teams within our conference, but every other team in the league wants to pick their conference title up, because it means that somebody else didn't get it and you've had, in effect, a success. And that's what hockey's about. Hockey's about success, and it's a results-based business. And if you get better results than the other teams, your reward is silverware, and that puts smiles on fans' faces. That gets people coming back, and that's the reason why we watch hockey, is to try and win things. If we don't watch it just because we've got nothing else to do with our time, well, mostly. But
I just want to press on this a little bit. The other week we shared the announcement from the Elite League that the seedings for the playoffs that were initially announced as being the conference champions from each conference being 1, 2, 3 has been done away with, and that we're now just going through a symbol 1 to 8. Has that devalued the actual conference system? Has that devalued it? Because you don't actually, other than picking up a piece of silver, other than saying that in head to head against Sheffield, Nottingham and Cardiff, that we would be the best of that. I saw that on Twitter you had a bit of a to and fro with Seth Bennett where you pointed out that maybe it wasn't sporting, but he was putting forward that it was pragmatic. Does that devalue the conference system in any way?
I understand what he's talking about and the pragmatism involved in it, but yes, it does. It devalues it if there's nothing tangible at the end of it, in that it doesn't actually... It should count. If you top your conference and you don't win the league, it should give you a better seeding for the playoffs.
I agree.
You know, I don't understand the rationale behind what they've done, just to say that, okay, we're putting you in the conferences so the smaller budget teams or the lower supported teams have a better chance of being in the mix towards the end of the season. The Manchester Storm, the Fife Flyers are perfect examples of what the conference system can do for you in the overall terms of the league. But if you get to this stage and then say, but here, hang on, playoffs wise, still want the big four in the playoffs, it does devalue it. But in terms of there's a trophy to be won, you want to win it, mate.
I agree with you. I think, you know, with regards to the trophy and the silverware, I think absolutely. I backed the conference system. You know, I was well behind it. I understood the reasons for it from the Scottish point of view, the teams trying and the money that was saved. I understand Seth Bennett's point about it being pragmatic and the fact that it sustained the league and redeveloped. And I had this debate way back when against Hitchie over whether the conference system was working. I think the decision by the Elite League to do away with the seedings has actually neutered the need for the conference system in its entirety, because it just doesn't, it may be pragmatic, but it just doesn't seem sporting. Simon?
I think both of you are right, in different ways. And you know, for me, the way it is right now, and Fife Flyers winning their group at a canter. Manchester Storm, I think, have won theirs tonight.
I think so.
After the, depending on the way, I'm not too sure how the other one finished, actually. The Guildford and Milton Keynes game tonight. But I think, to be honest with you, I think they should just be doing away with them. I think he just need to get rid of the conferences and have a 12-team, well, Edinburgh, don't know what's happening to them, but, you know, have a 11-team or a 12-team league. Everybody's got to play each other, three home, three away. That's your 56 games, I think it works out. But I just think that, you know, you've got an opportunity there of Manchester pulling in fairness, fair play to them, done a good job, you know, winning those games and getting back up after, you know, we all said we thought they would tail away, and now they're sitting above us because they've played more games against their interconference teams. We're sitting at the minute top of our conference group, yet we've lost against, I think we've actually lost against everybody else below us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Edinburgh's beat us this year, Dundee have beat us, Fife haven't beat us. Fife drew three each with them, but every other game we've beat Fife this year. So, you know, for me, it's just a matter of, yes, I understand about Scottish teams trying to save money, but listen, we have the biggest travelling expense of any other team in the league. And, you know, yes, if you get the opportunity of going maybe from Guildford and you've got a double header in Scotland, take it instead of going the whole way to Fife and having to travel the whole way back down to Guildford again for a Sunday game or whatever it may be. I think it's about time the Elite League just said, right, you know what, there's no more conferences, this is the league, this is the way it's going to be, everybody plays each other, three home, three away, let's get on with it.
Those two games, the games against the Clan and the Panthers, you can watch the highlights from our good friends at Belfast Giants TV on YouTube or the Belfast Giants website. Let's have a quick chat about tonight's game, Wednesday night's game. The Belfast Giants travelling to face the Fife Flyers at Fife Ice Arena in Kirkcaldy and storming it 8-4. Blair Riley, Darcy Murphy, Steve Salviano, and Darcy Murphy was second in the first period. Made the Giants 4-0. Colin Shields opened the second period before Charlie Mosey and Dan Corrally pulled two back for the Fife Flyers. Shed's got another one on the power play, and it's Spiro Galakos pushed the Giants further ahead before Peter LeBlanc rounded off the scoring for the Fife Flyers in the second period. Into the third period, Colin Shields gets his hat-trick at 9:44 into that period before Danik Gauthier pulled one back to the Fife Flyers, but it was 8-4 as it rounded out. Chris Trill in nets for the Belfast Giants, 36 shots, 32 saves. At the other side, well, Andy Isles has been out for a few weeks now. Jordan Maher in nets, 42 shots, 34 saves. Your referees were Pavel Hallis and Neil Wilson. One note in this game, Mr. McGimsey, a number 47 icing for the Belfast Giants.
Oh, yes, Adam Keefe coming back. You know, the Fife Flyers went on greatly about their injury crisis that they're currently suffering, but, you know, I don't think Adam Keefe would have wanted to have to put the skates on. He said it himself as much, you know, he's not so much that he's enjoying not playing, but the time has taken its toll on his body, and he's not healthy enough to play as much as he wants to. But, you know, with Kiefer out there, his 300th regular season appearance for the Belfast Giants was just a nice little milestone to tick off. He mightn't have to lace them up again this season. If he doesn't, that'd be a nice number to finish up on. But, you know, with Ross Hancock out there tonight, with Adam Robinson out there tonight, it's nice for them to get a bit of ice time, but a reward for all the training and the service they've done over the course of the season. So, you know, it's a game where we came out, you know, we scored in the first 20 seconds of the game. I think there's been 4-point nights there from Blair Riley, I think Collins, Darcy Murphy, Shades, as you say, with a hat-trick. So a couple of decent nights on the charge for a few of the boys.
I just noticed here that the first penalty handed out to the Belfast Giants was a slashing call on Adam Keefe.
Which unbelievably, Simon Kitchen called at 5 o'clock this afternoon.
He did.
on our WhatsApp group. First call is going to be Adam Keefe for slashing, and I don't know whether he's had a wee chat to him or what says and told him, but unbelievable.
I haven't spoken to him yet, but I'll text him as soon as we get finished here. But there's another milestone in that game, David, the third goal.
The 3,000th Elite League goal. First Elite League team to 3,000 goals at Belfast Giants. Do it again, setting records since we started.
Steve Salviano scoring that goal, 15:34 into that first period. Simon, your take on the game? I've only seen period 2 and 3 of this game. I'll watch period 1 back, but your take on the game?
Game, get off to a fantastic start. You know, first shift, 18 seconds in, that line is put together that the way on Sunday there of Riley Collins and Murph. First time they've sort of played together this year was on Sunday, and I think they've 9 points between them on Sunday, and this tonight the 12 points between them. So hopefully that little trio then they can, you know, put a few more points on the board. But you know, I think it's great, as I say, being down, the bodies that were down, and just getting on with the role and taking things forward. It's just a matter of getting, picking up the 2 points. And I know the boys flew in there today because they had they booked it when we were in a really good position. And then I think that weekend we lost against Milton Keynes at Edinburgh. But they just kept the flights on and took a bit of heat off them again. You know, two big games coming up this weekend. And as I say, it's not as hard in their bodies as a full day on a ship. And it was so windy here today and the weather was awful. So I don't think they'd be overly keen to take the ferry across this afternoon. But overall, you know, total first period was absolutely superb. 4-0 up, then getting 5-0 up. And I've said it a few minutes ago, it looked as if we stopped skating. You know, they scored two more goals. We luckily rebounded, got another two to take it to 7-2, and before the end of the third period, 7-3. Whoa! But
And if you want, those commentators are doing my head in.
Great to see Shed's getting the hat trick. Darcy Murphy was excellent again tonight. I think we should maybe get his mum to move over. He played brilliant at the weekend there on Sunday, and another 4 points tonight. So great to see him getting on a few more. But if you watch the goal by at the start of the second period, where do you see the pass from Spiro? What an unbelievable drop pass for Spiro, and Shed's that they had his first goal and then empty net. Absolutely outstanding. But we thoroughly deserved it. Good for Chris Trill getting another win under his belt. And good to see the coach out there. And I'm sure he's absolutely busted.
We'll give him a call. Now, the Belfast Giants, Davy, and the Fife Flyers, when they went into this game, were both 64 points on 50 games. Now, Fife obviously have they've had a bit of a tough run in to bring them up the level. But with regards to playoff positioning, we just talked about it there. You know, how important was getting that win in Fife?
Well, it is. It could be the difference between, you know, let me just quickly get the league table there, Paddy. I was talking about it earlier on. You know, third place fifth, so third place sixth, isn't it? So 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's the difference between getting the Flames, potentially the Panthers or the Steelers in the playoffs. So, you know, with the greatest respect, I think you would rather take Guildford over two legs than perhaps Panthers or Steelers. So, you know, it's turned out, we've said it over a number of months, Fife have still a lot of hockey to play in this next few days. You know, they've got, I think they come to us on Saturday, they've game on Sunday, midweek game again next week, doubleheader next weekend. You know, their month has been, you know, their seasons was really compacted, and that's their own fault. They wanted to start the season later and stuff for themselves. So, you know, they have to take that on board now. But I think for them, They're not going to score too many more points over the rest of the season. I can see, you know, I can see Steelers getting over them. I can see Guildford taking over them as well. So, you know, they could tumble very quickly.
The highlights of this game will no doubt come out soon. Fife Flyers TV will put them up on our Twitter account as soon as they do. Lads, before we hear from Adam Keefe, because I know Simon talked to him earlier, and was talking to me yesterday, the day before, we've got that interview coming up. And before we hear from Andrew Dalton, the Team GB, the long squad came out yesterday. What was noticeable and what a few people have picked up was there are only two Belfast Giants. Usually we get more than that. Jackson Whistle and Colin Shields in the side. We got an early TFA in from our good friend Joel Neal, asking, what's your take on the Giants' light contribution to the Great Britain squad this year? We consistently boasted one of the league's most impressive Brit packs around the turn of the decade, but it's a thinner pickings, league import structure or neglect. And it's something we said, Simon, maybe a few weeks ago, that we were going to chat about, but the fact that, you know, we have Matt Toe, we have Colin Shields, Jackson Whistle, Mark Garside, but maybe not having the development of players coming through. It's tougher. I haven't seen since the days when Thornton and Todd Kelman went to Peterborough and brought in Craig Peacock, we haven't really seen us going out and picking up the British talent as much.
It's a real difficult one. I know, you know, we're looking for around the league or maybe even lower leagues at the minute for British talent, because it doesn't come cheap, Paddy. You know, these guys, they're, you know, you bring them in. Yes, there's 14 imports now. We're lucky enough, we're with two British goalies, so we can have 14 players. Are we going to go that next year? Don't know. No idea. You know, Stephen Murphy, we haven't mentioned. I'm sure if Stephen Murphy was fully fit, in my opinion, he's a better goalie than Murdy. You know, so he probably would have been in the lineup as well. Mark Garside, I'm sure he probably would have been in the lineup. And then when you've got Toy, who's missing out, and you know, Toy was man of the match in the Challenge Cup final less than 10 days ago, and he's not even included. So, you know, we've got five British players that could, you know, potentially make that lineup if they're all fully fit. And I am a wee bit disappointed not to see Toy being given at least a chance. But it's a difficult question to answer because, you know, we don't know enough of what guys earn and what sort of money they're on in college. You know, Boxy came here, he would have been on a lesser wage because he was at school. You know, and then do you bring another British guy in and let him go to school here? And obviously you've got to put him up in accommodation. Whereas if you look at all the British guys that we have here, apart from Jackson, they're all living here now.
Yeah.
They've all lived here for a long, long time. They've all got their own mortgages or they've all got their own houses and they've all set up camp here and I don't see them moving anywhere else, even when they finish playing. So it's a real, real difficult one. Yes, I'd like to see us getting a bit younger and I think we're going to have to on the British side because, you know, Sheds is 38, David?
I think he's only 36, mate. You might be right.
I think he's 38. You know, Stephen Murphy's 35. Garside, still can't believe Garside's only 28. Boy's 30. You know, so, you know, it would be nice to bring in a couple of young British talent guys and give them a chance to play. But then again, you've got the likes of Adam Robinson, Ross Hancock, Stevie Eccles. They're coming in and you know, yes, they got a bit of ice time tonight. I know Stephen Eccles didn't travel. But when you're up 7-3 or 7-2, whatever it may be, and you get a chance to play, I thought the boys did actually really well when they got the opportunity to come on and, you know, chip puck out and just get it ready to go again. And it's a real challenge, David. Sorry, Paddy, because there's not a never-ending list of players can play at this level that are actually playing in the Elite League, you know. So 12 teams to go around, 28 players. Actually, they're all playing, isn't that right? They're all playing the Elite League. All the players are selected. And then you're bringing in the likes of, I didn't know Hammond had a British passport.
Earhart.
I didn't know Earhart had a British passport. There's somebody else as well. There was three guys.
Brendan Brooks.
No, Brooks played last year.
Did he?
Oh, yeah, he played in the
Gold Medal. Evan Mosey, he played last year as well.
So, I mean, again, that just goes to show that they're actually looking outside of Britain for British passport holders because there's not an ever-ending list of players to play at this level.
Yeah, but the dual, I'll come to you on this, Dave, as well. The dual imports are something that's come through. It's the fact that we need to find this new strain. We need to find this new, because as I think as Simon put it there, you know, some of the lads are no spring chickens, all due respect to them. They maybe have under 5 years left in their career regards playing at the elite level. I also pick up on the fact that we say that, like, so Jackson Whistle, Stephen Murphy. I do like the fact that, you know, and I agree with you, they give us the option of having the extra imports on the ice. But arguably, the likes of Colin Shields playing as a top six forward also allows us to have that extra import to play in that sort of position because he is, in inverted commas, let's say, like David Clark, that import quality Brit. But where do they come from now? I see that a lot of people online talk about the likes of Tyler Plews in Edinburgh, and maybe there's some guys who are playing, but the EPL isn't there to be that next level. The next step down in the NIHL is a chasm.
I don't know where they're coming from, Paddy, to be quite honest, because obviously going up to 14 imports, the league are looking to put as the best product they can. It has gone from the infancy of the EIHL when it was set up, I suppose, as a developmental league. It's gone to ISL proportions of sports entertainment. You know, people don't want to pay to develop young guys. They want to go and see the top level of sport that they can. And, you know, if you're good enough, you'll get in. But there's no there's no competition within this league that you can really blood players. You know, early rounds of Challenge Cup perhaps, but you know, you see now that 2 points lost in September or 2 points gained in September are equally as crucial as two gained in the middle of March. So you know, we can't develop players in this league. They've got to come from somewhere. And you know, should they be going away? You know, well, I'm sure we'll talk to Todd Kelman and ask him the same later in the show. You know, should these players be going away to North America? I know Stevie Eccles back working the airport or whatever, but you know, he was burning it up in junior. But the gap is huge. The gap is gigantic from those junior leagues in Canada, North America, Sweden, Denmark, wherever these young guys go now. You know, they're not able to come back and just jump into the lineups either in the elite league. So it's a real catch-22. As you say, that the better players that have served and been legends within this country for years are going out the top end, and there's nothing really coming in the bottom to push them out. I see that, am I right in saying Craig Peacock hasn't made the squad?
Yeah.
No, he hasn't. He's only got 5 goals in the league.
You know, goals. As far as the Belfast Giants go, you know, the injuries to Garce and Murphy, they're not injured, they're in the squad. You know, it's pretty much straightforward as that. I agree with Simon. It's hard luck on Toy, because the likes of being a man of a match in a championship final proves that he's good enough to play at this level. I think sometimes it's harder to get into a squad than it is to get out of. There's a few boys that are probably in the squad who, reputation-wise, maybe rather than form, are in the squad. You know, Toey would be one of our form players at the minute, and certainly if GB were playing this weekend, you would say, on form, Toey deserves a shot. But, you know, unfortunately for him, you know, a lot of times these things are done on what you've done in the GB shirt in the past as well. And I guess that has to be respected. A lot of these guys last year won a gold medal. So, that you know, they've kind of held on the right to have another opportunity with GB. But it's unfortunate that he hasn't even made it into the 28.
The only one, sorry for jumping in there, Paddy. The one thing I'd like to point out is we're talking about the top-end British players that we have here. Those top-end British players, at least 95% of them have spent time in North America.
Yep.
You know, Sheds, Mark Garcia was away, Stephen Murphy was away for a while, you know, for a year. Maybe they're only 16, 17 or 18 years of age, but they've all been there. And, you know, they don't, the standard of coaching that we have in the UK, yes, it's getting better. There's no doubt about that. But you take Northern Ireland as a whole, you know, we've had many, many players who could play the game. I mean, even before the Belfast Giants came along, we had guys here who could have went on and played at a much higher level, but just never got the opportunity to do it. You know, I have no doubt that, like I said, there's 3 or 4 guys that I played with back in late 1990s playing for the Castlereagh Knights. I have no doubt that there's guys in that lineup that could have went and played for the top teams at that stage in the UK. No doubt whatsoever. But we just never got the opportunity to do it. And, you know, you've got the likes of, as I said, I was talking to Mark Garcia about this a few weeks ago, and Gary was saying, you know, I went away to North America, spent a year, and have come back. Obviously, you talked about Stevie Eccles. You know, yes, he played at the Canadian Junior, I can't remember, the CJPL, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But as you've already pointed out, David, it is a massive jump up between playing that and playing EIHL. And, you know, Stevie's a real good kid, great skater. You know, he sees the ice really well. But, you know, having to be out there every single day, having to serve your time sitting on the bench. You know, there's guys, you go back and look at the Edinburgh lineup right now. Yes, they could beat 12-1 last night, but how many Brits did they have on their team? I think they had me, Cali Robertson, Alan Robertson, Harry Ireland, Harry Ferguson, Tyler Plews, Jordan McLaughlin, and all these kids are under 21 years of age. That's the way to do it, but you don't want to get tagged 12-1 every night.
The problem without getting into an Edinburgh sort of debate, they don't have the import support around those 21-year-olds. You know, if we had a few of those Edinburgh players, perhaps in Belfast, we could nurture them. They're training with better players every day. You know, Edinburgh aren't training with better players every day. They just don't have the numbers.
Again, you know, they've had enough time up in Edinburgh to get it right, and they continually, well, I'm not blaming the players, absolutely not. But the ownership there needs to really take a good look at themselves, because they're not doing themselves any favours.
I think this is a topic we'll move on from, but no doubt Steve Thornton and Adam Keefe will have this at quite a high priority as the next few seasons come on, because it is it's a key part of having any team in the Elite League. On that, let's hear from Adam Keefe. Says talk to him yesterday.
Adam, big weekend just passed, Brayhead loss and the Nottingham Panthers. What's your assessment of the two games?
I actually thought we were pretty good against Brayhead. Our discipline and some calls that I'm sure we disagreed with. But, kind of let the game get out of hand and turned into a special teams game. And our special teams wasn't up to task on Saturday, and we lost the game as a result of it. So, but I thought the effort was there, and I thought we came out the game really well, and we actually dominated the first period. And it's exactly what you want to see, especially after a championship game. You know, sometimes teams can go into a lull and forget that there's still games to be played. Well, that wasn't the case, and they saw that. You saw that on Sunday. You know, the guys bounced back well and came out against a very good Nottingham side, and for probably 55 minutes with a better team. And then I think Nottingham got some life there at the end and made it close. And you can never let Nottingham back into the game because they're a dangerous team.
Moving into this weekend, big game on Friday night, another hard conference game against the Cardiff Devils. They'll be wanting a bit of revenge after losing the cup final in Cardiff just over 10 days ago.
Yeah, I mean, every conference game is massive, and that's one thing I can say about this team is every single conference game we've showed up and we've battled hard. And, we haven't got all the results we wanted, but this is a big one. There's two games left versus Cardiff. I look at it as a chance to win another trophy. I'm sure Cardiff looks at it the same way. There's a home and home versus Cardiff, so we'll take it at that, and we'll hopefully getting some bodies back before Friday, and I'm sure that they're hoping for the same. So it'll be an exciting game on Friday, that's for sure.
Fife midweek, and then heading into another game, last game against Fife this season in the regular season. They've been a tough team to play against this year, but you've sort of had their number.
Well, they're a good side. They've always been the last few years, especially in Fife. They're real hard to play against. It's a hostile environment there, and I expect no different tomorrow and again on Sunday or Saturday when they come to us. Those are going to be two tough games and important games. Right now we're deadlocked in third place with the exact same wins, losses. It's a third place game that guys got to get up for. We're short bodied here, but we've been here before and we got to find a way through it.
Okay, this is something we've been wanting to do actually for a few weeks. We chatted to this fella quite a while ago and he agreed to come on, but it's taken us a bit of time to do it. But we put it out there on Twitter that we're going to speak to an Elite League official, Elite League referee, and we're delighted to be joined by Mr. Andrew Dalton. How are you, mate?
Not too bad, thank you. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on. Listen, we're not going to hide behind anything here. I think we, from time to time, we do give you guys a bit of a hard time on this podcast. I know I've been guilty of it. Says I've been guilty for it. Davey likes to say that he doesn't want to give the referees a hard time, but I guess for you guys, it's part and parcel of the job.
Yeah, I mean, what can you say? It's nice to have one of your panel on our side, anyway.
You think Davey's
okay? No problem at all, Andy. You're welcome.
But yeah, do you feel that obviously this is a vocation, this is a route you've taken down being a referee? How did you get into it?
Pretty much the same as every other referee, I think, in this country. You start off playing, played right through juniors, realised I wasn't going to be good enough to make a career out of it, so decided to stay in the game, did some coaching. And that led to one Saturday afternoon being roped into officiating the under-10s or under-12s game. Can't remember exactly what it was. And used to get a few quid. And back in the day, that was your beer money for a Saturday night.
And that's it? It just developed from there?
Yeah, just developed from there. You start getting into it and you start getting more games and games at a higher level, and before you know it, it starts to become what you start doing at the weekends, and the better you get at it, believe it or not, you start to enjoy it.
So that, so you're saying a bit, it started off for you as a bit of a, okay, I'll get involved, and then you got more into it. And that sort of developmental route, was it structured, or was it just a case of, I'll just take a step up now, and then all of a sudden you get to a higher level where it becomes more structured?
No, it's all structured right from grassroots level. They start off with level one course, where you just go through the basics, and you just work your way up through the levels, right up to level six is the elite league level. And yeah, you just go from there. So you're always sort of learning on the job through the levels, and you get assessed at each level, and then you end up at the top if you're good enough.
And obviously, you know, again, I'm a big supporter of the Team Stripes. voice my opinion every night when we've got the webcast. Since you've brought in the four-man system, and obviously you've taken the step up from linesman to referee, have you found that step up easier than what you thought, or are you still a work in progress?
No, I think it's definitely been as difficult as I expected. Some nights are easier than others, depending on the teams, depending on who you're working with, whether it's an experienced guy you're on the ice with or someone that's less experienced. But I think for the game, it's been a breath of fresh air, and long may it continue.
Colts, I've got a question in here on Twitter from Danny Neal, and she's asking, what kind of personal professional development do you undertake on a regular basis to ensure the level of improvement officiating is there? And, you know, are you peer reviewed? Do you watch your last games? I know you watch tape back. Do your other guys do the same?
As far as I'm aware, everybody has the opportunity to watch their games back. I certainly do. I know a lot of the guys do. Since the four-man system came in, we've also been under new leadership, if you like, with the guys that run DOPS. They're now in charge of us, giving us direction, sending us weekly emails, watching games. So we're getting a lot more feedback and a lot more guidance than we have previously. So I think that's kind of where we're at now, and that's new as well. So that takes time for the guys to take that on board and put it into practice.
That's interesting you say that. It's the fact that, you know, obviously the incident with Colton Freder and Spiro Galakos caused a big upheaval, and maybe, you know, what was the catalyst for the changes that took place? What were your thoughts around there when this incident happened, the way you looked at it, and what happened after it, and what were your thoughts around that?
I think that was just the straw that broke the camel's back, really. I think we've been crying out for the four-man system, certainly from the officiating side of things. It's in every other league in the world, or if not the world, in Europe. And the elite league's at a level now where you just can't play without it. It's just part of the game. The four guys have to be out there to control it the best you can. We're not going to get everything right. We're still human, believe it or not. But we're gonna be better with four guys out there than three.
On that, you know, obviously we've went straight into the four-man system. It started more or less bang on the 1st of January, and like yourself have had to take a step up and put those armbands on, and quite a few others. We saw Chris Wells the other day doing it and the likes. But one of the things that, you know, how it's been implemented, do you think it's been done hastily? I say that because, like I said earlier, I'm not going to hide behind this. The other week in the game that you refereed with Matt Rose against the Milton Keynes Lightning, there's two guys that you guys, in regards to Elite League refereeing, you've only really taken that, both of you have only really taken that step up since the 1st of January at Elite League level. So with all due respect, that's a case of two guys who have a month's worth of Elite League refereeing going into a game with Elite League side. Do you think something like that should happen?
Well, first of all, I think in an ideal world, we would have started the season with the four-man system. That would have been fairer on the teams, recruitment-wise. It would have been better for our preparation as officials going into the season, knowing exactly what was ahead of you. So I think from that side of things, it, you know, it was difficult to change halfway through the season.
Yeah.
And with regards to the guys on the ice, I think it's just, it comes down to who's available, your location. And yes, not an ideal situation, but I think we'd still rather have four guys out there than three. So if we have to suck up some games like that in the short term, then I think it's better for the long term.
I think that aside, Daltz, that might have been that weekend. There was obviously almost a crisis within the referee, and the point that, you know, Smithy was away,
mm-hmm.
having a baby. I think there was illness, people out of place with flights and stuff. You know, it was just one of those weekends, but obviously not ideal for you to be thrown in that situation either.
No, that's it. I mean, it's the same as a team. You know, we have injuries, we have illness, we have guys unavailable, and the only difference for us as opposed to a team is, you know, we all have full-time jobs and guys are not always available to work every night, you know, every game night. So we do get left in a shorter supply sometimes, and you just have to go with the best you've got.
Andy, you talk about training and guidance, and obviously with those email updates that you're getting coming through now, I haven't been privy to them. I don't know what says on them. But do you think it's going to get to the stage where you could have an assessor on the night itself telling you how you did, well, you did well, well, you made a bad call? Do you think we'll ever get to that stage of the IHL?
To be honest, I'm not sure on the, you know, everything costs money. As it is at the moment, we are getting a lot of feedback via guys watching videos. Okay, it's maybe not the same as being live in an arena, but a lot of the times when supervisors come to a game, they'll come in before the game and they won't come in again until the end of the game. So they don't affect anything that happens during that game. They don't come in and tell you, oh, you need to tighten up, you need to do this, you need to do that. So generally it's on a game-by-game basis anyway, so I'm not sure that having somebody in the building makes any difference. We all know as officials now that there's somebody watching every game, and trust me, if something happens and they don't like it, we get an email about it, and rightly so. We should be accountable, the same as the guys on the ice have to be accountable.
Jump in with another one from Tommy Bryan here, and a bit more lighthearted, and ask the ref from Twitter. Players obviously chirp each other on the ice and from the benches. What's the best chirp that stands out to you?
I don't think there's anything I could share on this platform, to be honest. There's been some good ones, but there's not many of them that are you're able to share.
Well, here, on the subject, I'll bounce back a question on the subject of chirp and stroke abusive officials, which obviously these guys are mandated to clamp down on this season. It's definitely been a lot more prevalent, not just with the Belfast Giants, but league-wide, the amount of abusive officials. But I've noticed over the last, certainly since the four-man system came in, the 10-minute misconduct is used a lot less, and the 2-minute misconduct, which in my opinion hurts the team more probably than the 10-minute misconduct, has been used a lot more. Is that something that's been mandated from above, or is that just a call to call the referees will make?
No, I think that was something that when we first came under the new direction, that was identified by the guys from the outside watching in. And it was something that they thought we needed to address, and that it had sort of got a little bit out of hand. So we were given that sort of direction to clamp down on it. And like you say, the 2 minute has more of an impact on the team, and you're hoping that the message is going to get through. Puts a team short, you know, for 2 minutes. Then hopefully the coach gets the message as well. 10 minutes, yes, it takes the guy out for 10 minutes, but it doesn't hurt the team for an on-ice numeration, if you like.
You mentioned earlier on Department of Player Safety and the restructure that took place there. What's your view on DOPS? Obviously, there have been times where they've been brought in, and it seemed like we had Simon Kirkham on this podcast quite a while ago, where his comment was, you know, the Dops isn't there to re-referee games, but at times it does look like they're re-refereeing games. At times it does look like they've went in to look at what's been called by the referee, and it doesn't, or at least I don't know whether you feel that's changed, but sometimes they maybe don't back up their officials the way that they should.
I think the new Dops has been pretty groundbreaking in the way it's come forward from what we had previously. And personally, I don't mind if I get something wrong. I'd rather, you know, be told and for it to be the right call given to the player on at the time, because at the end of the day, that's how we all learn. I don't think the re-refereeing thing is... I'm not quite sure what you mean by that, but
there have been incidents that have gone by where maybe either the wrong call was done or not a call hasn't been done and a citation's been made by a team to say, I want you to look at this hit, and then a suspension has been done on a hit that wasn't called in the game. You know, that's do you not see as that being a re-refereeing of a game afterwards? When a referee's decided to let the thing go, or a referee hasn't called it, to re-referee that incident by video just seems trite. Especially if it's been brought by an opposition team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure on what the procedure is in place for the teams putting in supplementary discipline. The only thing I can say on that is, you know, we get one look in real time, and, you know, we don't always get it right. And I think the guys will hold their hands up and say if they didn't get it right. But I think we'd all rather have that call made, even if it's afterwards, because we're trying to improve the product and get rid of the cheap plays. And if that's what it takes right now, then I think that's for the good.
Andy, you're in a position where you're doing the EIHL and you're also doing games in Denmark. And I don't know if Hixie still goes over there. I know the two of you were over on a regular basis. Do you think it's an opportunity? Again, and I know it does come down to money. But we have had, I think it was Swedish referees the year before last, or maybe even last season. But do you think it would help our league and help our officials if we brought over officials from the Danish league?
I think if you can bring any exchange program and include the UK in it, then it's only beneficial. I know we have an exchange program in Denmark with Austria and Norway, where the guys go back and forwards, and guys come into Denmark from Austria and Norway, and guys go the other way. And we're starting to see now that we're all working at the same level. So, you know, it doesn't matter who's on the ice. The games are refereed in the same way. So I think it would be beneficial if we could get some sort of program going again. But like you say, it's all down to money at the end of the day.
And just follow up on that question. You're talking about the Danish league. I know nothing about the Danish league. Is it on a par with the IHL, or maybe would it be like a lower league than what the standard would be in the UK?
I think we've seen over the last couple of years with the Continental Cup, the British teams and the Danish teams have been pretty closely matched when they've played against each other. I think Sheffield beat Rungsted this year in a shootout. So I think the teams are fairly evenly matched. I mean, we've just moved into playoffs now, and I think the level is definitely up on the Elite League right now. But, you know, we're in playoffs, so you'd expect it to go up a notch or two.
And Daltz, if you get the phone call tomorrow from the head of Dops, Todd Kelman, and he says, Andy, you're now in charge. You're now in charge. Now, we joke with Todd all the time. He knows we know he's in charge. But you get the call to say, you're now the head of refereeing, and I'm giving you a budget which is exceeds anything that's ever been. What would you change? What would be the first thing you would change about the refereeing setup or the official setup?
Well, that's a good question.
He must have Googled that one.
Yeah, he didn't give me a heads up on that one. I think just more investment. You know, there's nothing. We had meetings there recently with Denmark, with some of the coaches come in, and you know, they understand that we're doing the best job we can, even over there. None of us are full time. You know, the guys come in, they practice, they go home, they sleep, they come back, they prepare for the game. You know, a lot of our guys maybe have worked an 8-10 hour shift. You arrive to the game, you haven't eaten properly, you haven't been able to prepare properly. And at the end of the day, we should be getting somewhere near, you know, the level of the players if we want to officiate at this level. And right now, that's quite a big gap, I would suggest.
Just a follow-up on that with one quick supplementary one. There's been a few questions about goal line technology and stuff on the Twitter there. Not everybody understands the nuances of not the same system being perhaps in every rink yet. When that investment is made and that TV technology is there in every rink, would you like to see referees having the ability to use the TV technology for more than just has the puck cross the line to have a review system, if you like? Or are you happy enough that it's just you call everything that you see, and if you have to check if one's crossed the line or not, you just go to the TV for that?
No, I think if we can get the correct system in place, then yeah, sure, let's review as much as we can, because you know, we can't always get it right. Like we say, it happens so fast that, especially if it's, you know, a high stick or a kick in motion or even goaltender interference, stuff like that is, you know, that's hard to tell in real time.
And communication, like the other week in Manchester, I can't remember who the two refs are now, but they go off and they come back on, one points the goal and the other washes it out at the same time almost. But, you know, that's just a bit of a miscommunication between the two of them.
Yes, we've all seen that. I think it's just a case of, like you say, miscommunication. As far as I'm aware, they both had the same thing in their head, but when they came out on the ice, it was portrayed differently.
Yeah, one more question here before I let you go. Thank you. Listen, we really appreciate your time, Andy. And we've got one in here which has been reflected on a few times from Neil Redpath. And it's just basically, it's a question of, you know, what's the best way to get started as being a ref?
I think the best way now is to go onto the Ice Hockey UK website or the IHA website and register for a level one course. They've been doing a lot of them over the last 12 to 18 months, trying to get new people involved. So that would be the starting point.
It seems to be that, you know, the one thing that cropped up, I think you more or less said it yourself through this chat, is the numbers, is the resource, the number of referees, the number of linesmen that are coming through, that there really needs to be a larger pool for development.
Yeah, I mean, like we touched on, it's a tough job and we're not that popular, so it's no surprise that
there's thousands of
people out there wanting to do it. But yeah, anything we can do to get people interested, you know, it's a lot of fun out there too. You know, we get a front row seat to the greatest game, you know, in the world, in my opinion. So
fantastic. Well, hopefully we get some information and we'll put it out there with regards to the level one courses, and maybe some people get down to Dundonald and do a bit of skating and get involved that way. Dulce, listen, thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much again to Andrew Dalton, and thanks to everybody who sent in their questions. One thing we're going to put on SoundCloud this week is an interview that our good friend Simon Kitchen did in the period break with the head of hockey operations, Steve Thornton. I think it was around 10 or 15 minutes chat with Steve Thornton in a period break of the game against the Nottingham Panthers. Let's hear a little clip from that now, where We hear Steve Thornton talking about his head coach, Adam Keefe.
He's a passionate Belfast Giants fan that bleeds steel, and I think that helps. The commitment has been there from the beginning, the amount of hours he put, and then every GM and every coach say they don't sleep, and that's, you know, it is a lot of hours because of the recruiting, but I know that he loses sleep when we lose games, when things don't go his way, and as much as I hate the fact he's losing sleep, I like the fact that he cares that much. I think he's got a great hockey mind. I like the way he does it with his X's and O's. His man management skills, which I think is 90% coaching now. I think being able to manage the new breed of players is probably more important than systems. He's done an unbelievable job at that as well. Like the individual meetings, the relationships he has, the guys just want to be a part of what he's doing. They want to follow his lead, and that's an intangible skill that's hard to teach.
We'll stick that interview up in full on our SoundCloud account later this week at soundcloud.com/AVFTB. That's the full interview with the head of hockey operations, Steve Thornton. Lads, two quick points to talk about because I know we're running on in this show. Two quick points to talk about from the week with regards to the league. We brought it up briefly. The Edinburgh Capitals, got humped twice, 8-0 by the Cardiff Devils, and then the other night 12-1 says by the Nottingham Panthers. It's tough on those lads.
It is. I mean, you know, they don't have because, you know, again, we underestimated them. I think that's the easiest way of looking at it, Paddy. You know, you've got, I actually feel really sorry for the players there. I mean, you take their captain / acting head coach who breaks a blade and they can't get him a pair of skates within 10 days to play a game. That's why he missed two games because he didn't have a pair of skates.
Yeah.
Now, you know, again, you're then depending on the young kids to come through. And yes, they're getting valuable ice time. They're getting learning experiences. They're playing with some, you know, there's two or three guys in that lineup that you would definitely look at to try and get for next season, in my opinion. You know, like I like the guy Cazola, I like Dylan Lawrence, and you know, I think they're good skaters and can play a game. And I think Edinburgh are really, really struggling, and it's gone on far too long. There was a league meeting yesterday. I have no idea what was discussed at the league meeting. Scotty Neal has done a great job, you know, taking into consideration you know, the crowds coming through the doors at Edinburgh. You know, I was there in October, and I think there was more Giants fans than there was the Edinburgh Capitals fans. So when you're getting more away fans coming down, and I'm not talking about guys who are, you know, Fife Flyers or Dundee, you can get to Edinburgh within the hour, even Brayhead. But I think it's a real challenge to potentially keep Edinburgh in the league. And you know, those guys that came into Belfast could be playing for jobs. But you know, going down 8-0 to Cardiff is no, you know, that's nothing to be ashamed about there. The young goalie, Jordan McLaughlin, had two brilliant games against us. And then, you know, getting trounced 12-1 last night by Nottingham. And to be honest, I think it was 11-1 at the end of the second period.
Yeah.
So, you know, fair play to Nottingham because, you know, they're not there to embarrass people. You know, that's not what our sport's about. And that, you know, I think they could have went on and maybe scored another 7, 8, maybe even 9 goals. Because when you're 11 down, does it matter if you can beat 18 or 19 goals? So I think it's a real, it's a sad case of affairs the way it's ended up at Edinburgh again this year. But we say the same single thing every year.
Davey, anything further to comment?
No, I think Simon's covered off there. You know, we don't obviously know the ins and outs and what Scott Neal has put into that club over the years. You know, in effect, he's kept it going and numbers are dwindling. You know, people come to watch successful hockey. It must be hard to be a Caps fan, and I don't mean that in to be condescending, and I don't mean it to be disrespectful. And I've seen something on Twitter last night about Nottingham Panthers fans going and sitting in the Edinburgh block last night and cheering
horrible.
For Edinburgh.
Horrible.
You know, that's condescending. I'm saying from a financial point of view, that club needs investment and big investment. And if it can't be Scott Neal, maybe it's time for Scott to hand the keys over to somebody. Maybe there isn't the investor there. I don't know. You know, it's such a storied franchise. It's such a great city to watch hockey in. And, you know, there's no doubt that people would go to Edinburgh to watch elite league hockey if it was there and good quality. It's just so unfortunate that it's just not good enough for the product, and it's affecting, you know, we'll talk Todd Kelman, as you say, later on there, Paddy. It's affecting the other franchises now.
Sorry for coming in again. It seems to be a recurring thing. You know? I mean, my interest in ice hockey was born out of the Murrayfield Racers. You know, watching them play in the Heineken Cup way back when, and the Benson Hedges Cup. You know, it's unbelievable players. You know, Paul and Tony Hand, Paul Pentland, Chris Kelland, Scotty Neal could play, you know, and Maury Hansen. And watching these guys play against the likes of Fife Flyers or Durham Wasps in the late 80s, early 90s. And then on obviously, grandstand. You know, what's that?
On grandstand.
Absolutely. You know, again, it's just, as Davey says, you know, it's a story franchise, but, you know, the facilities they have there aren't great. The ice has always been great. I really enjoyed playing there, not on numerous occasions. You know, I think if there's somebody going to come in there, they need to look at a new building. They need to look at a new ice pad and trying to make a positive impact. Edinburgh is an absolutely gorgeous city. I think it has the capability of having somewhere there for you know, a better rink, and I think there's obviously investment. There's a lot of rich people about Edinburgh, but they don't want to stick it into a never-ending pit, because that's exactly what it seems like with the Edinburgh Capitals at the moment.
It's funny you should mention that, especially with the Murrayfield Racers this week. We received a fantastic and a very humbling email from a gent called Gary Miller, who's a former Murrayfield Racers fan. But he just wanted to email in to say how much he had enjoyed the Challenge Cup, the Championship podcast that we did last week. But, and it was, he said some very nice things about what we do here in A View from the Bridge, and we thank him for that. But he also talked about how, you know, he was a Murrayfield Racers fan who remembered back to, you know, a packed barn at Murrayfield against the Fife Flyers, where people were even sitting on the stairwells, you know, watching these games, because it was just so big then. And to compare that to the recent incarnation, which he still can't seem to, he's given enough chances to, but he can't make a connection with. But to see in between just the stark difference between the height of the Murrayfield Racers to what they have now, I suppose you can compare that to the height of the Durham Wasps and what became of the Newcastle Vipers, where we don't want to see the Edinburgh Capitals fans lose hockey, because I've seen that firsthand with the Vipers and hockey in the Northeast and what my friends up there lost. You know, you don't want to see that happen. You also don't want to see 12-1 thumpings, 8-0 thumpings, and you don't want to see a team who are struggling with, and fair play to the fans who are trying to support them week in, week out, hoping that they can get the odd win. You know, 5 regulation wins this season, you know, 11 points compared to the top, which is 79. It's just really tough. I'm going to move on. Briefly mention that the race for 8th is still ongoing. Brayhead Clan, Coventry Blaze, Dundee Stars are really the three who are fighting for it. Brayhead 52 games, 50 points. Coventry Blaze 52 games, 49 points. Dundee have a game in hand on both of those with 51 games and 48 points. So enough to put them, into 9th, but they don't have the regulation wins over the Brayhead Clan. So that's going to be a real battle over the next couple of weeks. Of course, we played the Dundee Stars in the final game, and I'm going to put my cards on the table here. I hope Omar Pasha's side have already qualified for the playoffs by then, because I don't want them looking a favour off the Belfast Giants, as much as I like Pash. You know, you got to be behind your own team. And we look ahead now to the two games this weekend. Friday night against the Cardiff Devils and Saturday night, St Patrick's Day, against the Fife Flyers. The Cardiff Devils, with their win over the Sheffield Steelers tonight, are 2 points away from winning the Elite League. They were defeated during the weekend against the Sheffield Steelers in Sheffield. I think that they had Tom Murdy in goal in that. Well, I suppose we're going to hear about that in a second, because yesterday, while Simon was enjoying himself at the SSE Arena, we had a chance to talk to Todd Kelman. Todd, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
It's been a week.
Pleasure to be here.
It's a delight to have you on at last. It's been a week and a half since the Challenge Cup final. Your assessment of the game?
Yeah, I thought we probably had the flow of play for the first period, and then you could feel the momentum shift in the second, and then honestly in the third we were dominated by the Giants, completely dominated. They smelt blood, and they wanted it more than us, and they won every battle, and they beat us every puck, and they outplayed us. There's, you know, that's it. That's the whole reason, and they deserve to win it.
Todd, how does a team change so much? Like we came there 7 days previous, and we were well beaten on that previous Sunday night. You know, we couldn't get inside, we couldn't get anything on bounds, and a completely different, as you say, the first 20 minutes, fair enough, Cardiff played very well in the first 20 minutes, but like sort of from 25, 30 minutes on, the Giants just took the game to Cardiff, and you didn't really have an answer to it.
No, I mean, like, I think Bouncey probably, there was probably two goals that Bouncey would have wanted back. Like, we had all the momentum, and then Benny, you know, threw that goal, or that shot in from the blue line, and Bouncey kind of mishandled it, and then I think it was your second goal that kind of went over, like, shot from almost a goal line. But, like, you can't fault Bouncey because he's been probably our best player all year. So, you could just see a shift. Like, Lordo, who rarely would say something he just said, like, in the third period, he said they just wanted it way more than we did. And there's sometimes, like, we talked about it afterwards, and we said, you know, like, I remember the first year my first year in Cardiff, when we played Sheffield, like, you know, they wanted to win, but we had to win, and it just felt like our season depended on it. And it was almost that same thing with, like, you could just feel like, you know, it just felt like your team just, it was just not going to happen for us. It was going to happen for you guys, and they played their absolute hearts out, and they deserved it. And, you know, like I said it before, like it sucks losing, but like, I'd rather lose to the Giants, the team that I respect and have a lot of, you know, a lot of friends that still play there and work for them and stuff like that. And they handled it well, and they were, you know, it was a good competition. It was a good game. And I thought both teams, the way we, you know, handled the whole event together was how it should be, you know?
Let's take you to the start of the event and something that's been much talked about, that video. I assume you signed off on that.
that video. You know what? I'm terrible because I don't even look at that stuff. So I kind of picked up on it after the game. I got to be honest with you, I don't think a video motivates or demotivates a team either way. I think it's probably something that well, that's what I mean. You didn't win because you played a video that said slay the Giants. I think you won because you outplayed us. And I don't think that kind of stuff. I mean, it factor besides for, like, you know, it's a good little story that's what motivated you guys, but I don't think that was it. So
let's take a wee look forward then, Paul. The Challenge Cup's obviously done now. It's back resting in Belfast until next year, and we'll go back into league action this week. You know, you've got the Steelers and ourselves back to back, really. Well, not back to back, but home and home, and over the next couple of weekends, and that conference title's still up for grabs. Look, it looks like barring a complete meltdown, you'll go on and repeat in the league. So, you know, how big a trophy to use is the conference? You know, personally, it's something that I've always, you know, wanted to win. Does it factor the Lordo?
Oh no, it definitely does. It's not the Challenge Cup, that's for sure. But it's you want to win it. Like you want to win, because I mean, I would say that winning our conference is a very tough title to win. You know, it's like a regular season, but it means a lot because you can't say, like, I mean, it's like Nottingham when they won everything but the conference. I know the year that Nottingham won, you remember they won the, what did they win? They won the league, the playoffs. Yeah. We, like, the Giants won the conference that year. And I think, you know, had Nottingham, you know, the league's the big one, but like, if it was us and we thought we have a chance to win everything, we would have probably wanted to, you know, celebrate the title, then have a couple of beers, then get up early but get up and prepare for the game. And if you remember, we actually won it because we actually tied them in points, I think, but like we won it on games, on regulation wins or something like that. But they lost the second game in Belfast that year, and that's what gave us the conference title. So It's salvageable, but like I think the conference titles matter because it's so hard to, like, the league is so hard to win, and it just gives everyone something to play for. Like Fife, I mean, rightfully so, they celebrated. It's the first trophy they've won in a long, long time, so they're pumped about it, and they celebrated like that. And I think they, you know, they showed how important it is, and you know, we definitely want to win the conference title. We definitely want to win it. And that's our focus, you know.
Your games games in the conference were obviously two against us, but you've also got a few against the Sheffield Steelers. You had one just last weekend. Now, you at the weekend, you played Thomas Murray against, Lourdes played Thomas Murray against the Caps, looking at tonight's result or tonight's score for the Caps. That's no surprise that you put Murray in, but you also put Murray in the next night against the Sheffield Steelers. Are we to read something into that about Ben Bounds?
No. No, nothing to read into.
Just give him Murray his chance?
Yeah.
Okay. So what lessons do you think Lourdes taken from the Challenge Cup final?
It was a tough loss. It was disheartening. But, you know, the better team won on the day, and that's sometimes it's us. And you can't take anything away from the job that Kiefer's done and the team that, you know, the effort that the team put in that night. And I think what he's taken away is just, you know, like it's making sure, and it's hard, it's sport, right? Like it's hard to say, like, you know, in hindsight, you're like, well, we need to make sure the guys are better prepared. And it's like, we couldn't have prepared them better. We, you know, you can never find excuses. But you think like, oh God, you know, like what if we hadn't all been so focused? We were so worried for 2 days about if the game was going to go ahead. And you know, like we spent 2 days shoveling snow, and not that the players did or anything, but like the focus really shifted away from the game, like for me at least, and for all our off-ice staff, from whether, you know, what we were going to do with the game, rather to is there going to be a game? And you know, like it probably we had planned the schedule around the fact of playing Friday and then having a day off, and you guys would have had to play the game the night before, and all these things kind of came together, and you know, it's not excuses, it's just you think of all the different factors that played into the whole week, and you just, you know, for us, we wish a lot of things went differently. But in the end, it was just, I just think that, I wouldn't say we weren't prepared. I just think on the day, you know, you guys outplayed us, and it happens in sport, right?
How hard is it, Todd, to be in the position you're in at the minute, just kind of waiting for that final to cross the line, you know, like barring a minor catastrophe, you're going to repeat, you know, is the team just focused to get the next 2 points, or is there an element there that
we're not really thinking about, you know, barring a disaster like you said or anything, we're not thinking about that. We're just thinking about we need 2 wins, and that's what we're focused on, and we would love to get them, you know, we would love to get a win on Sunday, we want to win on Wednesday tomorrow night, and we'd love to get a win on Friday. And but like, we're playing some good teams right now, you know, and nobody wants to be the team that you know, if we can win the league, and nobody wants to be the team that loses that game or anything like that. But it's tough. Like we've all been there. We've been there, you know, I've been there many times. We've won it, we've lost it. And it comes down to, you know, everyone, it seems to always come down to the last weekend. And I wouldn't be surprised if this one does too, you know.
Team GB was announced today, and there were four Devils in there, two Giants. Now, Giants Brits haven't really changed that much since you left. Is the talent out there? Do you think the Giants are going to struggle sort of replace these older Brits? Because with the two new teams, with the limited resource that there is in Brits, there hasn't really been that sort of going out and finding a sustainable Brit for the Giants since you and Thorts went and picked up Greg Peacock.
Yeah, it's hard, right? Because you know, the Brits you need have it's reduced over the years. Like we're at 14 imports now, and you know, back in the day when it was 10, you're like, you relied on your Brits a lot more than you do now. And I mean, Sheffield have, you know, made a statement with saying that they want to develop young players, and you know, for me, you got to be careful, because you want to develop players, you want to develop players to feed your team, but you also, you know, like, we are we are judged by winning, and this isn't, you know, you're not judged by how you develop young players. You're judged by winning, and you want to develop players to ensure that you can win the later stage. But I don't know. Like, it's a tough thing, and it's not just a Belfast Giants problem. It's a problem for everyone in the league, and you want to know where's the next crop coming from, because it seems that the best young players all are going to Sweden or going to Canada, and there's a, you know, it's, they're not coming up necessarily and staying in the junior hockey systems in our respective clubs. And, you know, I obviously know the junior setup in Belfast. It's going to be tough to get the next few Giants players out of there. And same with Cardiff. Like, it's such a leap from the junior hockey to the level of the Elite League now. Like, the Elite League's so good now. And I mean, it's come on leaps and bounds in the last probably 3-4 years. Like, we're playing four line hockey now. Guys are carrying their imports. It's, you know, like, you just look at the competitiveness of the league. It's never so good. And it's exciting, and we're competing in Champions League as a league and all that kind of stuff. But, it just spreads the gap between the junior hockey setup and what the Elite League can offer. Because you got to think, the best junior kid in Cardiff, or the best junior kid in Northern Ireland, is not going to get the same exposure and the same ice time and same development as an average kid in Canada, you know?
Would you, if you probably are in this position, Todd, but if you were in the position, the likes of a Stevie Eccles here in Belfast, who went away, played junior in Canada last season, did very, very well, but hasn't been able to, you know, we speculated when he came back that he wouldn't be able to bridge that gap. You know, I think he's had 2 or 3 shifts all season, maybe early Challenge Cup rounds right at the start of the season, apart from that warming the bench and training. And, you know, he's not progressing enough to earn a spot. Would he be better? You know, you don't want to lose him to the sport. Would he be better looking back to North America to keep building that junior career to try and come back a better pro?
I think he would. I think they all would. Like, I mean, look at Jackson, right? So, like, he's I know it's different because he basically grew up in Canada, but Jackson has played the majority of his until he came to Belfast. He's through the junior system. He was a star for one of the junior teams in Canada, one of the best teams in Canada, the Kelowna Rockets. And I think, like, I'm a big believer in ice time. You know, I'd always say, like, you're better going down a level and getting ice time. Like, same with Liam Kirk and Sheffield, he's starting to get regular ice time. But, you know, if he could have been playing under 20s in Sweden rather than sitting on the bench in Sheffield, I think he would have developed more. And I think it goes the same for everyone. Like, I think you can't necessarily make the jump from a fourth liner into being a top 6 forward. It's such a jump, you know, it really is such a jump. And I don't know, like, do you want just your young guys to be fourth liners? You know, like, if they're not going to play, like, we've got a couple of young Brits, and we have the same problem. Like, they just, you know, like, that under 9 or that under 23 rule is going to have to change, I think, because it's great if you get a couple guys that are under 23, and then all of a sudden 2 years later they're not, and that defeats the whole purpose. Like, what should we do? Should we just fire Craig Moore after next season because he's not an under 23 anymore, or should we continue to develop him because he could be a good player for us? We have Tom's Rutkus, who, he's actually born in Latvia, but he's grown up in the UK, and he's a Brit, and he's 19, and he's got a lot of talent. But, like, when we're gunning for a championship, you know, is that the time to start developing guys? Like, it's, you know, Sheffield are in a position now because they're sort of set in their league position that they can start playing their guys more. They played their guys more on Sunday than they have all year against us, which is great for them. But, like, you know, it's, you know, they haven't been playing them that much all year. You know, and last year they didn't play them very much, so. You know, a guy like Sam Duggan, who's in Sweden playing a ton, but he's playing under 20s. I bet he's developing more, you know?
Last question going into this weekend, but of course you said you need two wins to take that back-to-back league title. Considering the time, the money, the effort that's been spent, the moves that take place, the Ice Arena Wales, you know, and the joy of that first title, what does this second title, or what would this second title mean to you guys and the fans?
Don't know. Not even thinking about it.
Come on.
I'll answer that if it goes.
Seriously.
I don't even like to think about it until we can actually, you know, until we win something, I don't even like to think about it.
Where do you see the threats coming then?
What's that?
Where do you see the threat coming then? If you don't want to think about it, where do you see the threat coming? Where do you think it could fail?
Where do I see the threat?
Yeah.
I don't see a threat or anything. It's just like there's a lot of hockey still to be played. And it's, you know, it'd be different if we were going a doubleheader up in Edinburgh this weekend, you know, but we're not. We're playing two what I would consider two of the top three teams in the league this weekend. And it's never easy to play Sheffield and Belfast and get two wins. So we're just, that's what we're focused on. You know, we're focused on Wednesday night and then we'll shift our focus to Friday night.
Well, and just one more. You mentioned Edinburgh there. You just come from the Elite League board meeting. Edinburgh obviously taking a heavy loss tonight. The future of the league, there's been a lot of rumours flying around about where the future of the league lies. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's tough, right? Like, it's, I don't know. I it's a hard one to answer because you don't, you know, maybe what I think personally can't really be said publicly. You know, like, it's, I probably have the same feeling as a lot of fans. Like, I don't think a team losing 11-0 and 8-0 and, you know, like, I don't think that's good for the league. I don't think it's good to have a team that you know is basically becoming the whipping boys. And right now, Edinburgh are the whipping boys. And I would love to see a strong team in Edinburgh. I would love to see them, you know, like, the last time they were probably really strong was when Dougie Christensen was there and had them in sixth place. And I would love to see a strong team. I think it's a great city, and everyone talks about what a great city it is and stuff. But like, it can't keep going like this. You can't have a team that has, you know, 300, 400 supporters and losing 11-0 on the road and, you know, winning five games the whole season. And because like, it's not just the Edinburgh Capitals business that is affected. It's all of our businesses because you're only as strong as your weakest link in any league. And you know, it hurts, you know, it hurts ticket sales. It hurts season ticket sales for teams. You want 11 strong or 12 strong teams. You want to know that every game someone can beat the other team. And, you know, like Nottingham, like, I mean, I've seen it. Like, you know, I look at our webcasting numbers and if we play you guys, we might have 500 people watching online. And when we played Edinburgh, we had 41 or something like that, you know? So, you know, it's not just feel bad for the Caps fans or feel bad for the Caps players or the ownership or whatever. You gotta think of the impact it has on all of us. And whether it's the current ownership or new ownership or an investment of some sort, I would like to see a dramatic change in Edinburgh so that they are a strong team. I think it's good for the league to have a team in Edinburgh, but not to the detriment of the league. And I always am able to separate, what's good for the league and what's good for the Cardiff Devils or what was good for the Belfast Giants when I was there. And you have to have that open and honest conversation with yourself and with the board and say, like, you know, what are we doing here? What are we letting continue? If they can't bring a viable business into our building, it's not good for our business. So.
Well, great. Is there anything else for you, Debbie?
Not from me, mate.
Well, in that case, Friday, the game on Friday is at 7 p.m. at the SSE Arena. If you can't get down there, you can listen to Simon Kitchen, who's not with us tonight for this interview because he's watching some guy from One Direction. But you can listen to him on Belfast Giants TV. Todd, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Never a chore.
Thanks again to Todd. Davey, they're 2 points away from winning the league title, but not on our ice.
Paddy, this is potentially one of the biggest games at the SS Arena for many, many years. Not on our ice, is right. Our boys need to be more than up for this game. It is crucial that we do not see a team skate to a championship in our building. You know, they'll have that in their mind because we went and did it in their barn just a couple of weeks ago now. But for me, this is absolutely key that we come out in this game and play exactly the same kind of game that we played in the Challenge Cup final. It is that big. It's that big to a Belfast Giants fan. It means that much to me that we stop them. If they want to win the championship and they're going to, that's fine. They can do it in home ice against Sheffield on Sunday night, but not in Belfast for me, please.
Simon, they are going to have, given that Challenge Cup victory for the Belfast Giants at Ice Arena Wales, the bit is going to be between their teeth and the Giants have to stop them.
Yeah, I think all the guys need to play the same sort of game they played against the Cardiff Devils 10-11 days ago in the Challenge Cup final. You know, it's you certainly don't want to, well, I don't want to be calling that bloody game if Cardiff come out and win and and having to say that line of congratulations. So look, we all know they're top of the league for a reason. They've won more games than anybody else this year, and they're looking nailed on to pick up the second championship in a row. So but I just, again, I agree with you two, and I don't think it should be, our boys will be taking it lightly. I honestly don't think that's going to be the case. The guys are going to be well up for it because they do want to get that trophy as the Urquhart Conference champions. So I don't think it's going to be for the lack of trying. So we'll just have to see what comes along in 48 hours.
Davey, Todd Coleman there was pretty sharp in his answer to my question in regards to the state of Ben Bounds.
Did Bouncy play tonight?
He did.
He did. He was very, very, very quick with the no there. So I'm going to say there's no smoke without fire there. And hopefully we're facing not Ben Bounds this weekend, but I assume we will be. I think, to be honest, you know, Todd was candid enough about it there. They want to win the conference as well. Obviously, the big prize is the league. And I think if you offered him one of the two, he's obviously going to take the league championship. And, you know, would he like to seal it out on home ice? I'm sure he would. So, but at the same time, they'll just want the 2 points and get across the line and get it won as quickly as possible. But, you know, please, 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 again, if you're listening to this, lads, not on Friday night.
Not on Friday night. And then on Saturday, St. Patrick's Day, with a special shirt, I believe, being produced.
I've seen it. Sorry, Glover, if you're listening.
But it is St. Patrick's Day. Those of us who'll be watching the Ireland v England game might be ready for the game in the evening against the Fife Flyers, who will want to be hit back against the Belfast Giants after tonight's thumping, says.
Yeah, again, it's come up the end of the season. You want to build momentum. You want to get the right results leading into the playoffs. It's only another five league games, is it left?
I think so, yeah. We have to reschedule one against the Milton Keynes Lightning next week. I think it's next Wednesday.
Yeah, 21st. So, you know, again, you just want to win. The hockey players, they don't play it to make the numbers up or lose games. They want to win. So it's I'm looking forward to it. And two good games this weekend, and then, as you say, another one next Wednesday, so we'll look forward to it.
The games are this weekend: Cardiff, Friday night at 7 p.m. at the SSE Arena, and then on Saturday night 7 p.m. at the arena. Also, if you can't get down to the games, of course, Mr. Kitchen and A.N. Other. I have to say, Dicko did very well on Belfast Giants TV.
Yeah,
he was really good.
Yeah, Dicko was really good indeed. I enjoyed sitting the game with Dicko, and his eyes wandered. He's too busy looking at the crowd for talent, so he certainly caught the eye of somebody the other night.
Fair enough. You can get that at Belfast Giants TV if you can't get down to the rink. Any other business, gentlemen?
Yes. I want to say a massive thank you to the OSC for putting together the fan appreciation day for Taff at the
weekend.
Stab was over. It was great to see. We Gareth Martin, Jason Bowen, Mark Morrison was there, Chris McGimsey. I haven't seen Chris in ages, so great to see the boys down and enjoying the game, and hopefully we'll get another fan appreciation night organised very, very soon. But great thank you. I have to say a massive thank you to Neil Whiteside for another brilliant video that he put together for for the Taff Day as well. So yeah, superb.
Davey, anything?
Yes, just obviously fantastic effort on the weekend there from Blair Riley, Ryan Martinelli, shaving the old beards off for young MacArthur to get a few quid towards his wheelchair and stuff. This is the stuff that Belfast Giants do. I talked about it on Twitter there, you know, the Jim Gillespie clause that we always talk about in their contract. You know, it might not actually be written in their contract, but it's very much set in stone within our organisation that you come to Belfast, it's more than hockey. And these guys wholeheartedly get engaged with all these good causes, you know, with young Blake and all there the other week. And I have to give a shout out to Dylan, who's been in hospital this week, young Ethan, who's going into hospital this weekend. Hopefully, fingers crossed for Ethan that he'll be able to be at the game. He hasn't missed a game this season. I've got it on good authority that he should be able to get to the game okay. So hopefully that'll work out for him okay. He's going in to get a few changes to his medication and, you know, and hopefully that helps pick him up a wee bit, because they're always in our thoughts, and our wee buddies, our hockey buddies, we're glad to give him a wee shout out any time the show. So get well soon, boys.
There was the Giants released something earlier today, I think one of the initiatives they've got associated with, but one thing was there was one of the Belfast Giants in the background, and I had to look at it about five times to work out who it was. It was Blair Riley. He looks about 10 years, 20 years younger. He's taking that beard off. I was like, going, I have no idea who that young lad is. It was Blair Riley. Says you got one more?
Yeah, actually just touched on, as I say, Marty and Blair shaving their beards off. Jasmine thought Marty looked like Freddie Mercury. But no, I'll let Jasmine tell him that. Neil Whiteside's asked me to have a chat about the event of this Monday night, Monday the 19th, that's going to be at the Odyssey Cinema. They're going to re-show the Challenge Cup final. And Neil's put a documentary together for leading up, the whole journey basically from September, from the first game against Dundee right to the final and obviously winning the Challenge Cup. So the game itself will be shown. It's not going to be the total duration of all the chat in between lineups and whistles and what have you. So it'll be about an hour and 15 minutes of full action. The three full periods will be shown. And then the documentary is about 45 minutes long as well. I've seen a couple of bits and pieces of it. I've seen the ending of it. And anybody going along might want to bring a box of tissues.
Yeah, I hope it's a good night. If that's it, gents?
That's me.
That's it. Okay, well, on that note, like I say, the game's on Friday and on Saturday evening against the Cardiff Devils and the Five Flyers, respectively, both at 7 p.m. If you can't get to the arena, Belfast Giants TV is the only place to go. Thanks, Mr. McGimsey, and thanks, Mr. Kitchen.
Thanks, guys.
Big thanks to Andrew Dalton, to Adam Keefe. We'll put that... to Todd Kellman. We'll put that Steve Thornton interview on in the next day or two on the SoundCloud account. You can also get in touch with us at AVFTB on Twitter, soundcloud.com/AVFTB. If you want to be like Gary Miller and send us an email, by all means, please do podcast@kingdomofthegiants.com. And wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy your hockey. We'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge. Podcast Network.